This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Major Hayden at Rackspace.
Thanks for having me. I'm a principal architect at Rackspace, and what I work on is everything OpenStack. Deploying OpenStack, maintaining it, upgrading it, but also with a special focus on security. So not only securing OpenStack, but what's underneath and what goes on top.
That's interesting, because you have a whole separate managed services team here. So most people would assume that they take on OpenStack from yourselves, they put stuff here, they engage with the managed security team, and that's security. What is the separation for them to understand?
So I think that there's a lot of it that's very basic. There's a lot of things that no matter what you're doing, whether it's a cloud, whether it's dedicated, whatever type of cloud it is, there's certain things you have to do well that are the basic. Everything from managing what software you install to how do you handle networking to what's allowed in the system, what isn't, how do you authenticate users and things like that. There's a division where all those basics are things that we try to help. We try to either automate or provide some advice or documentation around. The managed security services takes it one step further. When you've covered the basics and you nailed them, then that's where you go to that next level and say, okay, we're ready to ratchet this up one more notch, or the risk of this system has gotten so high that we want to go to that next level.
How sophisticated are you finding customers once they start to take on cloud? Many of these will have run their own networks in their own environments before, but they're not necessarily very sophisticated when it comes to security. Do you find that there are certain classes of customers by size or by industry where they're stronger or weaker?
It really depends. It's not so much by size, but I think it's what their exposure to cloud has been before. So you'll find some companies have done some type of cloud work before, whether it's a private cloud product or a public cloud product. And they'll have an idea of that freedom that you get from being able to say, I want to make a network. Oh, I made a network. I hooked it up to this VM. This is fantastic. And they've already been through that, and then they've discovered, wait a minute, we hooked up these networks entirely wrong. Everything is connected. This is horrible. Let's start over. By the time they get to us, they're like, we know exactly what we want to do. We want to know exactly how we want to deploy it. These are the networks we want. These are the VMs we want. And then, of course, we'll have some customers who are still in that initial phase of, you know, oh my gosh, I can make a network whenever I want to. So what we try and do a lot for those newer customers is help them understand what they have, help them understand what a good practice looks like, what a not as good practice looks like, and then give them that advice and give them examples. I've seen very large companies come in that have not a lot of exposure to cloud that have had some trouble with it. And then I've seen some small companies come in and be much more engaged and have a lot more knowledge and experience.
How much can you accelerate that with playbooks? Because if we look at other parts of the industry, we tend to take a playbook, you're going to do this job, here are a bunch of basic steps that you need to take, get you to here. Security lends itself naturally to a set of initial playbooks from which you then customize. When you talk to customers, do they ask for a playbook? Do they bring their own playbook?
It's a mix of both. So we obviously bring some things to bear. The way we deploy the platform, the way we set up the networking and the OSs and everything under the hood does a lot of things for customers without them even having to think about it. Like they may ask about it later and we'll say, oh, that's because we did this and this for you. And they're like, oh, that's fantastic. But then there's a certain aspect that they will have to do. So when they go and create their networks or their instances or set up their storage, there's certain things that we can bring to bear in the platform and we can give them certain automation. But in the end, that's something they have to wrap into their processes. It's something that when their developers go and build something in a developer environment, their operations team has to give them that fabric to where the developers don't have to think about security, like it's built in for them. We offer a few things, especially around securing the OS underneath OpenStack. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of automation that will take hardening standards and just apply that for the customer from the get-go. And then when they do an upgrade later or we take them to the next version of OpenStack, it's still there. And the great thing is they can take some of those playbooks and actually run it on their instances as well. So if they say, look, I don't have automation around Microsoft or Linux technologies, they can actually take some of the stuff we've put under the hood and use it in their virtual machine.
How many customers struggle with the integration from what they've got now to moving to cloud and at the end of the day running both, because they have to synchronize what they're doing with security, they have to understand the handover, they have to plan what's going to be happening in terms of patches and ownership and everything else? You've several times said they go and do this and they go and do that, we give them something. Is that getting better? Is their understanding better? Or are there an increasing number of customers saying, look, we've got this, we want to go to this, we're really not sure how we get there, can you just do it?
I would say it largely depends on the maturity of the traditional corporate security of the customer's organization. So you'll find some that are very mature and they want to find that pathway to yes. So like someone in the business says, we want to do cloud. And the security team says, we would love for you to do cloud. Can we take a deeper look? That's what I look at as more of a mature corporate security organization. And then you'll have some where people say, I want to do cloud. And the corporate security department says, you cannot have cloud. So I would say in the earlier group, I think it has improved some, because I've been on several calls with larger customers where the security team will say, hey, look, in a traditional world, we have done this with the networking and we've been able to add this thing in and add this thing in. Like, how do we do that in cloud? And so then sometimes it's point and click. Like sometimes you hit an API and you build a network in a slightly different way. And then the security team, they have to see it done a couple of times. Oh, that's fine. Like that's the equivalent of what we do over here. And then, of course, there's always those little challenges around compliance or we need a forensic copy of this VM. Well, okay, well, that's a little bit different than a server where you can take it off the rack and unplug it and go take it in another room. And there's certain things that just have to be translated. So I think the companies that have those mature corporate security organizations look at that and they say, oh, well, here's what we do in the physical non-cloud world. Here's what we do in the cloud world. Great. Okay, that translates. It meets our requirements.
How do they match their security products? Because in the non-cloud world, they'd have bought security products, they've got them in place, particularly the sophisticated customers. They're now coming to cloud. Those products may not be cloud ready. The only way they can run them is put them in a VM and then stick them on a cloud instance, which doesn't necessarily make them a very good security product anymore. Do they want to bring their own licenses? Do they want to ask what tools you've got? Is there a whole phase of matching security products so that they don't have shatter points in the middle?
That's a little bit of all of those at some point. So some customers will say, hey, we've already paid for this intrusion detection system or this logging system or this firewall type system. And they'll say, we want to just bring it over and bolt it on. And then we say, okay, in the end, what are you protecting against? Is this compliance checkbox? Is this something that provides you real value that you put into some system and get something great from? And if it's the latter, if they say, hey, no, we actually get real value from this, then what we can try and do is find out where that fits in the cloud world. And almost always we can find a way to make it fit. The other side of the group, when they say, hey, look, no, this is a compliance checkbox. We need something that does X, Y, and Z if we're going to meet this compliance that the government says we have to do. And then we try and look at that and say, wait a minute, does it make more sense to bolt that on? Or does it make more sense to just redo how we're thinking about it? And that goes back to the previous question. Like some folks will take the physical representation of something happening in more of a dedicated world and say, well, I have to make that in cloud. And then we say, well, do you really have to? Let's go backwards a bit and let's talk about what you're afraid of or what your threats are or what your biggest risks are. And then let's see if we can mitigate those. And it may include this technology or this process that you have, but it may not. And so sometimes customers will ask us as well, say, hey, we don't have a thing that does this. And then we'll say, well, here's some suggestions, or here's something from our managed security team, or here's something maybe that was talked about at the last OpenStack Summit that's an emerging technology that your developers could actually take a look at it and work on it, which that's one of my most exciting parts of OpenStack, is that when you go to a customer and you say, man, I really wish Platform did this thing, and I can be like, oh, yeah, I completely do too. Do you have anybody that knows how to write Python? And they're like, yeah, and I'm like, well, here's where the project is. You know, your folks could actually go work on it tomorrow, so that's kind of exciting.
OpenStack's kind of a movable feast for them, though, isn't it? We've got new distributions coming out faster than any operating system in history has ever released. And with each of those, there's a whole set of testing got to be done on code, hardening got to be done on code. We've resolved some of the portability of code in terms of the rolling upgrades. That's become a huge bonus now going forwards. But applications don't necessarily play nice in that space. We've got big tent going along where people are bringing in new applications, new changes to OpenStack. From where you sit, how do you tie all that together? Because at the end of the day, by the time you go to the customer, you need to have done your own assessments on this. You need to have decided that this is secure or this is where there's a weakness, this is where we have to add stuff. How easy is it to keep on top of that, given the frequency of releases?
If I break that into two parts, I think there's a Rackspace part of that, and I think there's a customer part of that. And so the Rackspace part, what I feel like where we provide a lot of value is we try to make all those transitions really simple and as painless as possible. And our job is to figure out how do we make it to where the customer doesn't even know that there's a new OpenStack release. We go and we say, hey, look, there's all these features coming down the pipe. We want to go ahead and deploy this for you, and here's what's going to happen. Okay, you might see three packets dropped, or you might see just one little thing over here, but you're going to be on the next revision, and you'll be good to go. So I feel like that's what our job is to take all that complexity and all that, not necessarily craziness, but just the amount of activity that's going on in the world of OpenStack and boil that down, test it like crazy, and make it to where it's not a problem for customers. But I think the other side of it on the customer side is that your app has to be cloud ready. And especially at the last OpenStack Summit, we talked about Kubernetes nonstop. And I talked to a lot of people about Kubernetes. You have an executive that comes over and says, what do you know about Kubernetes? And I was like, well, a little bit. And they say, well, I really want to get into Kubernetes. I'm like, well, it's pretty cool. Like, what do you want to do with it? I don't know. I just want to get into Kubernetes. It's going to solve my business problems. And that's when I can go back and say, well, wait a minute. Don't look at the name of the technology as something you want to hitch your wagon to. Figure out all of your apps in such a state that you could get them onto this technology and save money or time or have less impact on your business or get you back to what you really care about. And if the answer is yes, then do it. You can't rub Kubernetes like peanut butter on an environment and then hope that everything gets better.
One of the interesting challenges we have with this is cloud ready. People are still taking VMs, dropping them into cloud, and assuming that their app is now cloud. the advantage of re-architecting to become cloud-ready and cloud-aware is that as you re-architect, you can deal with some of those older security issues. You can revisit code, you can maybe even rewrite if you've got time, depending on what it is, or find something better out there. When you talk to customers and you start to talk about being cloud-ready and taking advantages, how mature is that discussion at the moment? Are we still in the, but I've bought this app, my business can't run without it, it must go to cloud? And how many of them are actually saying, that's a good idea, why do I need to be cloud-ready, and what do I get from it?
I would say the majority of the conversations and where they are now is more on the latter side of that. So customers are thinking about, I have an app, it needs to run somewhere, I need to have X amount of copies of it, and this is what I do. And so it's less of the, I have this monolithic app that takes 24 gigs of RAM to run or whatever. It's less of that. There's more embracing of this microservices thing. And you see a lot of customers coming on board. They're not running a proprietary database, or they're not running a proprietary message queue or whatever. They say, look, I have an app. It runs Python and Nginx or Go or what have you. And then I have a database and a message queue or something like that. And then at that point, getting that into a cloud environment, whether it's OpenStack or Kubernetes even, something like that, it's not a heavy lift. It's just basically saying, okay, you used to put this on separate dedicated, or maybe you had VMware, or maybe you had some other private cloud. Let's teach you how to do it here, or let's teach you how to do it where maybe you lose one of your web servers, but it's no problem. One pops up over on the side, and it's ready to take over for the one that died. There are still some of those older conversations where a customer does say, I've got this huge monolithic thing, and it runs on a box by itself. I want to make it cloud. It's more of that question of what's the business value? Like, where are you trying to get to?
That's interesting, because if we look at some of the other cloud providers out there, even some of the other OpenStack providers out there, they are dealing with these enterprises that have got these mission-critical apps that they're terrified to let go of. And we saw that in virtualization. It took a long time to get database teams to consider virtualizing that server and gaining the benefits of being able to just spin up a new instance or to be able to take snapshots and rebuild the snapshots quicker. You seem to be getting a lot more customers who already started that move, that change of approach. How fast is that accelerating? You mentioned microservices. That's not a conversation you get with a lot of organizations. Tech teams, maybe, but not really when you're engaging with them.
Sometimes what you'll find is that different organizations will have different parts of their IT groups. This is the group that manages all the tier zero. If it goes offline, cars will start rolling down the street or something like that. And then you'll have maybe another group that is, I don't know, like a little more on the cusp of new technology. So not necessarily like R&D, but kind of like the folks that maybe don't wear the shirts and ties to the office every day. And so what they're looking for is they're more on the cloud ready side. And then sometimes what they do is they will get a private cloud deployed within their company. And then some of the people who do more of the traditional workloads will say, hey, wait a minute, how did you said you were going to deploy that thing, and then you had it up in like 4 hours. Like, what was the deal? And, oh, yeah, you know, we have that private cloud. That private cloud, like, what do you mean that private cloud? And then you have folks from the more traditional side of the IT organization who want to get in on it. Then you start talking about how do we expand so that this other group can start putting their apps on it. But then you start to have those conversations and the collaboration within the organization where they say, hey, we've got this big monolith. How do we quit monolithing? And then you have some of these newer folks or some of these folks that are embracing the newer technology say, well, we had that problem too. Like, let us work with you or whatever. So the microservices conversation may not come out of the traditional side of the IT, but it's coming out in every organization to some extent.
It's interesting. If you look at the analyst perception of cloud and what's going on, much of this is not driven by IT, it's driven by business units. You've talked about some of this being the traditional group in IT and some being maybe not the non-traditional or the more business-focused people. How much of the business that comes to Rackspace actually comes from IT people when you're talking? And how much do these conversations start with a business unit and eventually involve IT when stuff has to be ported?
It's a mix of both. I'm not sure if I could put a percentage on it, but I think you'll have developers that will embrace something. And then they'll say, wow, that was quick, or that was easy, or they'll be able to rapidly prototype. And then someone along the line will ask a question of, how did we get that done so quick? And then the developer will say, well, I put it in this private cloud, or I put it in AWS, or I put it at Google, or wherever. And then someone says, well, should we do more of that? And then the developer says, well, yeah, we probably should, and then it expands. So sometimes you'll have it where it's developer-generated. They'll demonstrate value, not even really knowing that they're demonstrating value, but leadership will pick up on it. And then sometimes you'll have folks that'll be at the higher level of leadership that say, look, we're tired of the licensing costs, or we're tired of the way we have to manage hardware, or we're tired of the delay in getting something online. And so they'll initiate the conversation and say, we've heard this OpenStack thing is good, or I attended an OpenStack event or a webinar or something. Tell me more about that and how it compares to what we're currently doing. those two conversations will be completely different, because usually your developers are not thinking a whole lot about cost other than let's make it super cheap at all costs. But then, of course, the leadership level, it's a much more complicated discussion. It's much more business oriented as opposed to what can I do as a developer? What can I deploy?
Where does that then tie back to security? Because we started this talking about security. If we look it out there when we start to talk to people about accelerating stuff, security becomes even more of a casualty in their minds because they see security as always being the big drag on what they develop. When you start to talk to companies who want to accelerate, how do you get them to understand that security has to be there from the beginning? That if they're going to re-architect, they've got to think about secure. What are the benefits that OpenStack is giving them in that sense? All those things, it's a missing part of the conversation a lot of the time.
A lot of that goes back to the maturity of the security organization that the customer has. It really comes down to asking the right questions and saying, hey, look, we need to go and deploy this application. How do we do it securely? And asking the question and saying, look, eventually we want to get to yes. Because does the application have to get deployed? Absolutely. Do we have to save some money doing it? Sure. Okay, so how do we get there? And so I'll say on the second half of that, like what OpenStack can do to make that process a little bit easier is you can just do that rapid prototyping without having to worry a whole lot about we have to go stand these servers up, we have to go reimage these servers. You can go build 5 servers, deploy your app, and then have your red team come over and attack them and say, you forgot this, you forgot this, you forgot this, these two things are connected, and you say, oh, geez, okay. Then you tear them down, and you go and you build them back with another script, and you could just rapidly prototype like that. And so that's kind of part of the whole Dell EMC partnership that we announced as well. It'll make it easier to lower that barrier to entry as well, so that way people can prototype and feel free to say, hey, what if? What if we did it this way? And then people will eventually get to the point where what if is not a scary phrase. It's like, what if? And then 10 people go pile around a keyboard and then go try something out.
I'd like to be really positive about that. But I've been in security a long time, and the what if this broke or what if that broke was a great conversation, like never. Because people don't want to invest in security teams. They don't want to take that 3 weeks to do the what ifs. They just want to kind of hope that the unicorn comes along and everything runs smoothly. You talked about people there using their red teams to attack it. The honesty of most organizations is they wouldn't know what a red team was if it bit them. So how much are you there engaging with customers saying, yeah, you're bringing this to us, we can do IDS, we can do that red team work for you. And are people reacting to that?
Well, first you almost have to take the temperature of the customer and really understand what they're concerned about and what they're deploying. So for some customers, it'll be an internal intranet deployment where there's no network connectivity whatsoever outside their internal network. That's a different conversation than if a customer says, hey, I want to go put this in a colocation facility that I have, and it's going to be exposed to the internet. Those two conversations are completely different. And so usually, once again, depending on the size and maturity of the organization, those conversations will go very differently. And some organizations won't even be open to one of those options.
But there is that scale-up factor, isn't there? Most of that application build first look is done on that private, not open to the internet. We're going to use it. The truth, however, is they all want to go to a cloud environment where people are connecting from home, or they're connecting on the road, and they miss that point where it has to be exposure tested. Hey, it works. It's fine. It hasn't broken. We'll just put it there. Do you monitor when people are doing this and go back to them and say, hey, look, there's a set of processes that we would recommend you do, or do customers just do it and hope?
When we do a private cloud, the first step is we ask and say, well, what do you want to do with it? Is this intranet? Is this going to be hosting public things? Like, how will your employees connect in? We ask a ton of questions. And then from there, we try to build an architecture that makes sense. And so sometimes it will be the customer says, hey, look, I don't really have folks that are very skilled in this area. And then we say, great, we can help you. Some of that becomes managed services type offering, and some of it just becomes very smart about networking and monitoring and things like that. It really depends on how the customer answers those questions and really what they want to do with it to where we're going to go. But I think in the end, it really depends on, I hate to say it depends, but it depends on what the customer wants to do, and it depends on how interested their security organization is on finding that pathway to yes. If folks in the organization say, look, this is important to us and we have to get there and this is something we have to be successful with, then that's obviously a very different conversation than you get in those stodgy, like bolt-on security teams where the developers are completely done, the product marketing's already gone out, and the security team says, did anybody ask us about this? And then you have to like go in there and try and bolt it back on. I think that's still where people get stuck, and that's where security becomes that drag.
Given the skill shortage, how many customers are taking advantage of saying, look, we can't afford these people. Those people who are good out there, they're worth a lot of money. These are the new millionaires coming along at the top end of this scale. We need better skills. We've got one or two people. How much can you offload from us? And what pressure does that then put on you in finding new security people for here?
It's a challenging job market for that one. Someone had a quote recently about the actual shortage number. It was staggering how big it was. It is hard to hire for. And then on the other hand, you have to find someone who's got deep technical knowledge in a few different areas. But then they also have to have that quirky sense of, I don't know, coming at things from multiple angles. I think a lot of security folks question everything. They look at a new piece of technology like the Google Home thing that they were announcing the other day. Some of the folks that sit by me were just, ooh, I still wouldn't put this in my living room. Think about what they're gathering here. They look at it from a different lens. Instead of being excited first, they're very inquisitive first. I would say it behooves customers who are not in the security business to look to a managed provider who has already done that work and created a work environment and created the culture and created a product line where they can do that. Some of the things we've done is not only hire people who have those capabilities and skills and that ability to question things, but then put them in an environment where they can work really well together. And I'll say, like, even our CSO tells us all the time, he's like, every single person in this company is a member of the security team. No matter what you do in the organization, whether you're a developer or you're in PR or you clean the floor, you're involved in security, period. We've created a culture that here that's kind of hard to create. If security is not your central thing, for example, if you're an industry that where you may not have a very large security team, that could be a real challenge. Or if you're a smaller business that's still growing, that can be a real challenge to say, hey, look, now I have to go hire not only just a couple of people, but now you got to find people who can work around the clock. And then what happens if one of them's sick? And then you go into, can be kind of a tough situation.
It's interesting. I look at the industry at the moment, and much of the conversation about cloud has been about costs and what are we going to save. I think over the next year, particularly as a response for the last few weeks, I think we're going to see a big shift on that. There's going to be a case of, why is the cloud going to make me more secure? What can I now gain from it on that security side? I think we're heading for an interesting time. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.